This is The Think Tank with Dr. Mike O'Neill, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
A repeat subject this week is crime and punishment. Last October, we did a show on mass incarceration in Arizona. That was based on a report from an outfit called Forward.us, FWD.us. Our guest was Felicity Rose, who was Director of Research and Policy for that organization. If you want to see the report, which was reported widely in Arizona media, you just Google Arizona imprisonment crisis. I double-checked it, and it pops up as the top item. Let me start out by giving you a very short summary of that report, or some of the key points. Over the last 40 years, according to this report, prisons populations in the U.S. have skyrocketed. And they stated, despite overwhelming evidence that states can safely reduce crime and incarceration through common sense reform, Arizona continues to be a national outlier with high imprisonment rates and rising correction spending. They go on, this is no small matter. Arizona imprisonment crisis removes thousands of people from the economy and costs Arizona taxpayers over $1 billion each year, preventing the state from investing in other things. The staggering, now I'm no longer quoting, but the cost of mass incarceration has brought together some unexpected bedfellows from the political left and right, including such right-wing stalwarts as the Koch brothers and their foundation, American for Prosperity. Arizona prisons, according to this report, and we'll see if it's contested, since 1978 have multiplied by 12 times, from 3,456 people imprisoned in 1978 to over 42,000 currently. County Attorney Bill Montgomery took exception to that report, and he's here to give his perspective on it. Mr. Montgomery graduated from the ASU College of Law and has been Maricopa County Attorney since 2010. He recently applied for appointment to an upcoming vacancy on the Arizona Supreme Court. Dave Tierney is also with us. He's practiced law over 50 years in the community. He was a civil rights volunteer who registered voters in the South in the early 1960s. He got his law degree from Harvard and is a senior partner at his firm, Sachs Tierney. Welcome both of you to the show.
Morning.
Thank you.
Mr. Montgomery, I want to let you go first since you objected to the report. And if you would, in your question, somehow answer whether you are questioning the figures on the magnitude of incarceration or simply the necessity.
Well, the necessity of incarceration shouldn't be up for argument. There are people who kill, who seriously hurt others, and who refuse to engage in rehabilitative programming, and so they continue to commit crime. And so there is a portion of that criminal population where incarceration is essential to provide for public safety, which is government's first duty. In terms of the main objections to the three different reports that were issued by Forward.us, they each suffer from some fatal flaws, and they play with numbers in such a way as to present the most negative view of the role of incarceration within our criminal justice system. And to be specific, the report spans 40 years of incarceration data. But and it's not their fault. It fails to account for the last 2 years, and by its focus also fails to be able to take into account that out of the last 10 years, we've had 6 years of negative growth in our prison population. In fact, the last 2 years, year over year, we've had negative growth in the prison population. Now, because they're utilizing Uniform Crime Report data from the FBI, they're not able to take into account the most recent data.
There's a lag in the availability.
There's a year lag, and based on when they published, they weren't able to take into account those last 2 years. So you know, I want to be fair here too. But the other problem with it is that the report fails to take into context the environment in which crime is committed within Arizona. We share an international boundary with Mexico that is largely unsecured. It's exploited by drug cartels for both human and drug trafficking in the U.S. In fact, repeatedly, year over year, the Drug Enforcement Administration identifies Arizona as the main thoroughfare for drug smuggling in the United States. So it should be no surprise then that we have the third highest number of criminal aliens with the single biggest offense that they're incarcerated for in our prisons being drug sales and drug trafficking. That's what the numbers show. Forward.us fails to acknowledge that, fails to account for it, and instead engages in rather broad sweeping generalizations with pointed criticism. It's not fair to Arizona. It also fails to account for how our sentencing statutes actually work. A very specific point, too. In the second report that was issued by Forward.us, they say that they had a hard time assessing the demographics of our prison population because Arizona doesn't define violent crime in statute. Yes, we do. We do it 13-706, and we do it at 13-901.03. And after the first report and in advance of the next two, I reached out directly to representatives of the organization to say, you know, if you want to sit down and look at the data, I'm more than happy to help you understand how these statutes work in the types of decisions that we actually make. They declined the offer and instead issued the reports that they did. Last point I'll make. Felicity was the keynote speaker for the most recent Arizona Town Hall on criminal justice. And in her opening remarks, blatantly misstated Arizona law and betrayed her utter ignorance of how our criminal justice system works in Arizona. These two specific examples. She actually claimed that if you're arrested for possession of marijuana and it's in a baggie, that prosecutors would use possession of the baggie, possession of drug paraphernalia, as a predicate felony for then being able to charge you with possession of marijuana that could potentially render you eligible to go to prison.
As a two-time offender or something
and
like
that. And that is, first off, first two drug use or possession offenses in Arizona, you get drug treatment. It's mandatory. There is an exception to that. If you have possession of methamphetamine, treatment is not mandatory. But if it's your first offense, you're still probation eligible. Second thing she said was that in Arizona, we define cocaine as a dangerous drug. And because of a voter initiative called Prop 300, dangerous drugs render you eligible for prison. Both of those are false. We define cocaine as a narcotic drug in Arizona. It's in our statute. And secondly, not all dangerous drugs are exempted from mandatory treatment, too, just methamphetamine. So I have to, I think, fairly ask, if you can't read our law, how can you possibly interpret it or try to analyze it with other data?
Okay, fair statement. We're close to halfway through our first half hour, so we'll defer Dave Tierney, who will I'll give you a chance to respond
to filibuster.
Effectively done. You got just a minute less. I would have gone to him, but right after the break, we'll return with Dave Tierney's reaction to what he just heard. We're here with County Attorney Bill Montgomery and Attorney Dave Tierney. We'll be back in the think tank in just a moment.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We're here with County Attorney Bill Montgomery and Attorney Dave Tierney discussing crime and punishment in Arizona. By the way, I understand this is not your first rodeo together. It was
Isn't that rather amicable discussion?
I thought I came up with a good pairing here, and it turns out my idea wasn't all that original, but...
No, actually, we have talked before on various podiums and at various times over the last couple of years. So I have three quick things to say about what Bill has just said. The first is that I'm not here to somehow defend Felicity Jones. I didn't know Felicity Rose.
The point isn't that report. The point really is the status of criminal justice in Arizona.
Right. So I'm not sufficiently knowledgeable to be her lawyer here today. So that's the first point to make. And the second thing is that Bill said this is a $1 billion cost a year in Arizona, the crime problem that we have.
No, I think – well, I don't – but I think it's – what isn't 1.1 in the state budget, 1.1 billion is the prison
– I've got the budget in my hand for the DOC. Yeah. And that $1 billion cost is really much more than $1 billion, which is why we're here talking about this, I think. It's $1.1 billion of our state budget, which is around 11-point-something billion. Mm-hmm. So it's a little over a tenth of our state budget goes to the Department of Corrections. But the cost of crime in this community in which we live is way, way more than $1 billion. We haven't talked about jails, which Bill is more than I intimately familiar with. We haven't talked about probation services. We haven't talked about the effect on the victims or the crime, effect on the economy.
If somebody's in prison, their whole family is feeling a pinch.
And his children and their education suffers and so on, and social services to pick up the miss. But what's really important here in terms of dollars, we've just had weeks and weeks of a government shutdown over a fight over $5.7 billion that the president wanted to put on the border wall. We're talking about a crime here in Arizona, a crime economic content, which is way more than $5 billion a year. And I think that's very important about what we're going to say here today. The last thing I have to say about what Bill has just said is that he mentioned the aliens and the presence of the drug cartels and how we are a thoroughfare or a channel for drugs reaching the rest of the country, and that's all true. I want to note that in the DOC corrections at a glance thing that they put out periodically, non-citizens, aliens, are listed as only 3,500 out of 42,000 inmates. In other words, it makes up about a 7 or 8% of our population here, which is a pretty small number given the shape of the problem that Bill mentioned with drug infestation coming across the border. But I guess the real reason that I'm here today is to talk about mass incarceration and the way it affects our state and our community. And I got to say that we are the fourth most intensive use of prison state in the nation.
We imprison more than all but three other states.
Correct. My native Massachusetts, which has essentially the same general population as this state does, they only have 10,000 people in their prisons. For that same general population, we have 42,600 today. This is, you know, a four times use of imprisonment. We incarcerate longer because we have statutes that date back to the 73 bump up in statutes, which the nation went through when we reacted to a crime surge at that time. And so we're catching on both ends. We imprison more people and we imprison them for longer than most states do. And the last thing to say about this is we're using our truth in sentencing, which is now 15 or 20 years old. There are only three other states that do what we do, holding people to 85% of their sentences on the ordinary instance. There are other states in which they reduce it much greater. And it's a good ploy to manage inmate populations. And, for example, Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, the average length of sentence served is more like 60%, sometimes 50%. And we take it to 85%, so that keeps our numbers higher. And there are many things we could say here, but the point is we are one of the more extreme states in the use of imprisonment. I come from Massachusetts originally. It's 50 years ago now, but Massachusetts has been a leader in experimenting with diversion, which Bill does to, I think, a small extent compared to Massachusetts, with early release, all sorts of alternatives to incarceration. And I once spent some time out of our country, traveling around Europe, looking at their systems of incarceration. And they use social workers as if they were Band-Aids. I mean, every inmate has got a couple of social workers trailing him or preceding him and so forth. It's something we don't spend a lot of social worker-type resources on. Our state's very much behind the wave in that regard. I don't mean to take all the time here, but I just want to say that there is another view, and Bill and I have swapped these views on some podiums, as you said.
Let me follow up with you, Dave. Mr. Montgomery has suggested that, well, first of all, the fact, I'm not hearing a dispute on the facts. For example, compared to Massachusetts, we're incarcerating four times as many. But he has suggested that essentially that's accounted for by the drug trade coming through the state. Does that account for a change of this magnitude?
Well, I'll let Bill say whether he thinks that's what it counts.
That's what I thought he was saying.
Yeah, but not entirely. You know, about 8% of our prison population is made up of criminal aliens. You take that 8% out, we drop out of the top five. I think we may get down to 7 or 8. And so that would be twice as few.
But of course, drug trade, that assumes you're equating criminal alien with drug trade, and citizens, Arizona citizens, can be engaged in that as well. So.
Sure. But about, I think, 25% of all those incarcerated for drug sales, drug trafficking, are criminal aliens, and that population is 33% of the total number of criminal aliens in our prisons too. Now, yeah, admittedly, we also have a number of U.S. citizens who are incarcerated for that as well. My argument would be that if the federal government did its job and established operational control of that southern border, we would see that criminal activity reduce dramatically. And any other activity related to drug trafficking that has a criminal nexus also, I think intuitively, would be reduced. The exact amount, I don't know, we'd have to see, but it certainly would be an improvement. And I don't really think it's fair to compare us to Massachusetts. Massachusetts borders other states. They don't border another international country. They don't have a problem with drug trafficking the way that we do. They don't have a problem with the same kind of transient population that we do. About 20% of our state, people are not living in the same house this year they were in the year before. These are all cumulative factors, not any one of which can I or any reputable social scientist say, you do this one thing, all else will follow. I will say this, though, about diversion, deferred prosecution, and other things. I didn't see any prosecutor in Massachusetts host the very first prosecutor-led diversion training program anywhere. The prosecutors in Massachusetts frequently call me to find out what I'm doing that's innovative. My office has established a new felony pretrial intervention program. I say new, it's over 3 years old now, and that is showing a recidivism rate of 5%. And talking about recidivism reduction, I think that's where we as a state really can spend our time and our money to see dramatic improvements in reducing crime rates and enhancing public safety.
We'll pick this up, and I want to ask specifically about you suggested a number of things that can contribute to some of the difference. I'm not sure if I'm convinced on the issue of explaining that degree of magnitude, but we'll pick that up and other questions when we return in the think tank.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We are discussing crime and punishment with County Attorney Bill Montgomery and Attorney Dave Tierney. You suggested, Mr. Montgomery, a number of factors that could contribute to increased incarceration in Arizona. I don't think you were claiming that that accounted for all of the different. If you're talking about, say, comparison to a Massachusetts, it's 4-1, or to other states, we're on the high end, whether it's fourth or if you take out some other people you suggest, it might be 6th or 7th. But we're at the high end of incarceration. Among the other things that this report that you questioned dealt with was the magnitude of the increase in incarceration since 1980. Weren't we a border state in 1980, and didn't we have drug trafficking then? If we look at the time series difference, there seems to be something going on there too.
Sure. And we've also had an increase in our state population.
Yes.
Doesn't account for that.
Doesn't account that, Meg, but it's definitely some of it.
No. So we've had an increase there too. But there's another side to this that particularly in the Forward.us report, they completely ignored. Today, Arizona is enjoying 50-year lows in crime in many of the Part 1 categories and 40-year lows in others.
As is most of the country.
Oh, but our drop in crime has outpaced the rest of the country. Mm-hmm. So we just didn't ride the curve down. Mm-hmm. And so that has to be a factor as well. So I would say – and when you look at the amount that we're spending on our incarceration – the incarceration budget for DOC, it's been about 10%. It's been between 8, 10, maybe 11% off and on over the last 10 to 20 years, right around there. And over that time frame, though, we've seen our crime drop as much as 40% overall. So we're getting our money's worth out of this, too. Now, having said that, I also want to be really clear that I'm not saying there aren't areas that we can improve criminal justice system outcomes on, hardly. In fact, my office and other prosecutors here in the state have been working with the legislature to try to improve diversion and deferred prosecution opportunities, in particular for those who suffer from substance abuse or mental health issues. And we're constantly working on those.
If I could just interrupt for just a second. Ballpark the percentage of the prison population that has a drug problem.
Well, by DOC's own numbers, about over 70% are identifying as having a significant substance abuse issue. Mm-hmm. The amount of monies available for DOC, though, to treat that limits the treated population to less than 10%. So I think that's one of the first areas that we really could enhance programming and services that are being offered for those who are currently incarcerated. For example, we could take a look at those who are incarcerated where their highest offense right now is drug use or drug possession, and work on providing substance abuse treatment and recidivism reduction programming to that population right there, because it's almost 10% of the population who are there. And what I believe we could do, and this would be a responsible way that would negatively impact public safety, provide treatment from the point of admission all the way through and not just as sort of a head start for reentry. And I would even
admission meaning admission to prison.
Admission to prison, correct. Mm-hmm. And I would even go so far as to say that for that discrete population, we could even offer double the earned release credits for those who are participating and successfully completing the treatment. Now, the double earned release credits, too, as well, also gives us the opportunity to supervise those individuals longer during the reentry phase into the community.
Does that involve changing the 85% truth and sentencing number?
It would for that. Now, one of the reasons why I would point to that population first is it's far easier for us, given the type of offense they're incarcerated for, to identify an underlying cause. It's substance abuse. So we can be much more predictive and specific with the programs and services that can be offered. Plus, we're dealing with individuals who do not have a named victim. You know, when we talk about truth in sentencing, how novel for us to be truthful in what we're telling people they're going to be sentenced for and how long they're going to serve. And victims in Arizona have a right to justice and due process as well. So that's another part of that crime equation that often gets dropped off. In fact, in those forward.us reports, I don't think they mention victim more than five times in all three of them combined. And that's part of my focus as well as a criminal justice professional.
Don't most people who are prison wardens running prisons want a lot of discretion to be able to impact sentences based on prisoners' behavior while in prison?
There's an element of that. And at the same time, in talking and working with legislators, they're also mindful that they don't want to give too much discretion and make it too arbitrary. They want to have some predictability in that as well. So I would say yes. Now, one other thing that we can do more of in Arizona, I had the privilege of getting to go visit the Lewis Prison Complex and see the Second Chance Center there, and the Perryville Prison Complex for Women that has a Second Chance Center there. And that's something that we could be proud of as Arizonans in our criminal justice system and DOC, preparing inmates, giving them life skills training, employment training, and readying them for reentry. One class I sat in on where it was inmates who were the peer support counselors, you had some individuals who were there for the second, third, and fourth time. And when I asked them the question of why were they more hopeful about a successful reentry, their statement was, well, this type of programming is encouraging and is treating me as an individual and a human being who can be rehabilitated. So we can do more of that too.
David, you've been patient.
So I'm going to put some numbers to what we've been talking about. 45% of incoming new inmates sentenced every year are for drug possession or sale. So we in order to have an enormous proportion of the incoming inmates with a drug tag on them.
How does that count somebody who's a drug addict and breaks into somebody's home? Do they count as drug-related?
On the basis of charge.
Charge. Okay. So somebody breaks into somebody's houses to support a drug habit may not count in that number.
He may not count. Yeah. On the other hand, 78% is the number that the DOC gives out for the substance abuse and mental health issues for the general population that we have, the 42,000 people. We only have 795 drug training treatment slots that can be used. They last about 6 months usually on the program. So in other words, not more than 1,500 are going to be rotating through a drug treatment program. That's a very light touch on what is a very big problem in our prison population. I think that were we to ape Denmark and Holland in terms of turning attention at the very front door, as Bill said a few moments ago, to people that have a drug problem, we could make a big difference in our population and in our recidivism rate. And we do have some very few, I think, programs that help people on job training skills and so forth. Perryville is probably the best example. Lewis is pretty good. But these are very small number of slots. We used to have a pretty healthy prison industries program, but that's 15, 20 years in the past. That was done away with at a moment of budgetary crisis, and it's never come back to the extent that we used to have it. But the bottom line is, we take these guys or women and we hold them for a period of time. It's a longer period than most states, and we don't give them much in the way of substance abuse or mental health training to help them. We turn them out without much of a follow-through program, and then we're surprised when we have a 50-plus that the DOC admits, and frankly, I think it's higher, 50-plus percent recidivism rate. So we're not investing the key dollars. We're warehousing people, essentially, and we're not putting in the kind of money we need to spend to really drive down our recidivism rate and therefore our population. And the last thing to say is about 4,000 of the folks that are put in every year. It's about 19,000, and about 4,000 of them are probation revocations. There was a bill 9 or so years ago.
You might explain what that is. Just
so we don't lose somebody's money. Either incarcerated and they come out, they have a term of probation they have to serve.
You must do the following.
You've been in for 3 years or whatever, 24 months is the average sentence these days. So you're in 24 months, but when you come out, you've got a charge on which this probation, and you're still on probation, right? Or you have a person who's never incarcerated but is on probation. They have a sentence which is pending if they break the rules.
And that could be something like a drug scan coming out dirty.
There's 10 different reasons that you could have a probation violation. But if you do have that, we had a bill about 8 or 9 years ago, and I'm trying to remember the number. I think it was 2010, way back. It has to be 2008 or so. In the middle of the financial crisis, we had a very good bill which shifted some DOC money. You could get that money to if you were a county and you reduced your probation revocations. Unfortunately, the next year, the legislature just kind of dropped the ball. They did not pay the money that the counties had earned by doing these things that they tried to do to reduce probation revocations and therefore the population in the prison. So the legislature was strapped for cash, and they said, that's it. We're not going to pay you the money. So that kind of dropped by the wayside. We would do well to spend some money trying to avoid these probation revocations, I think.
I was seeing some as day went on, I saw some agreement in your body language there.
Oh, yeah. No, it was back in 2008, 2009. I was actually part of some of those stakeholder meetings representing victims of crime. And we wanted to make sure that people were current on restitution to be able to earn time off of probation. And even though Maricopa County didn't get that money, no county got that money, Maricopa County went ahead and engaged in a lot of those reforms. And at the end of 2017, I was back in D.C. at a 50-state public safety summit, and Arizona was recognized for reducing either 23-25% was the percent reduction in recidivism among probationers committing new felonies. And so we've made some gains there. Dave mentioned, when you come out of prison, there's one or two supervisory regimes you're still going to be under. It's either community supervision, 1 day for every 7 days served. That's where you get your 15% truth in sentencing from to provide for supervision. If that time frame is too short, though, what prosecutors use is a probation tail to provide for better opportunities to succeed in reentry. One thing that we've been trying to work on in Maricopa County, and I partnered and supported the Department of Corrections in doing this, is to create a community reentry center where if you do have what's referenced as a technical violation of your release,
give me an example of what
that is. Well, it could be a dirty UA. Okay. It could be somebody relapsing for substance abuse is one of the easiest things to point to. If you're committing a new felony, you're on a different track. Maybe it was
– That's not technical. It's
not. Maybe you didn't check in with your community supervision officer.
MIA.
Or probation. And you didn't follow up within the first 30 days. Mm-hmm. That could be a violation. Well, in Maricopa County, that can mean that you go back to prison and serve the rest of your time within no supervision when you reenter the community. And so I agree with Dave that in those circumstances, you're putting someone back out on the streets. And if we haven't provided the recidivism reduction programming, help with rehab while they're in, yeah, they're back in the same environment. And we're essentially asking them now to make different decisions without giving the tools to do it.
We'll be back with County Attorney Montgomery and with David Tierney, attorney, in just a moment in the Think Tank.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We are back with County Attorney Bill Montgomery and Attorney Dave Tierney. I want to pose this question to you, Mr. Montgomery. We've talked about a lot of the language about imprisonment is always about rehabilitation. But we know that imprisonment is for multiple purposes, one of which is punishment.
Yes.
My question to you, and there are certainly crimes that deserve flat out punishment, both as deterrence and just as a kind of a moral statement. Question to you is, aren't there alternatives in many cases to imprisonment that are in fact punitive? For example, requiring not to, a work requirement, for example, community service, but not a, but I mean, amounts larger than you often see, you know, a weekend, a month for 6 months or something, but really extended periods of time. And what I'm thinking about is what you always hear about the prisons functioning as crime schools. You know, you're on probation, you're not allowed to associate with other criminals. While you're in prison, you're guaranteed to. Have we explored those options of non-imprisonment options that are sufficiently punitive to satisfy the kind of public moral outrage?
Well, I would say that we do it now. We don't get credit for it, and the Forward.us reports certainly didn't even acknowledge it or spill any ink over it. For example, and we're expanding these programs now in Maricopa County. Rural counties received $250,000 from the legislature session before last to initiate these two. You commit your first felony. If it's a property crime, harm to a victim is minimal. You're going to get an opportunity to go through counseling, recidivism reduction programming, and this is a third-party provider that we use. You will pay a nominal amount to participate in it, but it's not enough to cover the entire cost. And if you complete that program and pay back the restitution that's owed, we will dismiss the case with prejudice. If your first offense is a drug offense, you're going to be given a chance to go through drug treatment. You successfully complete that. In some cases, we won't file the felony charge. If you've been through that program once and come through again because it's mandatory treatment the first two possession use offenses – we're going to give you a chance to do that too. And if you successfully complete it, we'll dismiss the charge with prejudice. That entire population, you come back again, now you're on probation. Okay. Now we're going to wag the finger even more and try to give you more intense programming and supervision. Before then, if you come back or you've committed a violent crime, dangerous crime against children, then we're looking to incarceration as the primary tool for public safety. So we are exploring all these alternatives to incarceration and trying to identify the most effective programming. And I'll tell you that today we have far more data, a far greater confidence in recidivism reduction programming, the use of cognitive behavioral therapy. In fact, I brought out and paid for out of my office budget Dr. Stanton Samenow, who helped pioneer a lot of this back in the early 80s, to talk to criminal justice professionals three different times. So we are exploring all of that now. And are there opportunities to expand that? Yes. And some of the points that Dave and I agreed on earlier are worth our time and attention and our resources.
David, your thoughts on that? Are we doing it right?
I groped for this piece of paper while Bill was talking. You know, when we look internationally, our country is the absolute leader in imprisoning people. The overall rate in the United States is 670 per 100,000 of population. Just to pick another, Spain, for example, which does border many countries and is an area where drugs come through and so on, Spain has 129 instead of 670 people under incarceration. If we look at other states in the nation, you know, we've mentioned a few of them, Colorado, New Mexico, Texas, New York, Kentucky, West Virginia. These are places where they've done amazing things.
Texas included.
Yes.
A border state.
In the last, I don't know, 6 years, Bill, there's been amazing changes in Texas. And my point is, we're doing some of what Bill has described here. But the numbers show that we are way, way apart from not just Massachusetts, not just Utah, but we are really leaning too heavily, I think, on incarceration. It's partly an economic thing, but it's also partly a silo thing. This takes organization. We mentioned before that $11 billion that we spend in the general fund and how $1 billion of it goes to the corrections department and how the cost of crime is way, way more than $1 billion a year in Arizona. The problem is that there are silos within the criminal justice system.
And the billion we're talking about is strictly the state appropriation.
That's only the state. The county's appropriations and the cost of what happens with incarceration is just fantastic amounts of money. What we need to do is organize, so to speak. We need to have communication and collaboration among the folks who work in the system. And Bill's engaged in some of this. My point, I guess, in life is that we're not doing as much as some other places are doing. We have a very resistive legislature. There's a bill right now, I think the number is 2270, and it seeks to reduce that 85% to something lower. And in maybe some circumstances, something lower, maybe overall, something lower than 85%. That is one.
And that
way.
Doesn't guarantee you get a loan, right? That just provides somebody in the system the discretion, like a warden or somebody, to
absolutely
to have an earlier release than 85%.
We used to have a very active parole board, and we need some discretion about inmate behavior and inmate motivation, which results in you getting out a little earlier. And that way you have more control over people in the prison, and they go to programs.
It's a carrot
and so
and stick
on.
Kind of.
Yeah, but you got to have the programs to put them in. You can't just, you know, move one piece on the board and have something down from 85% and make it 60%, and now you've got no programs for these people to go into.
Or somebody to watch them.
And somebody to watch
them. You're moving somebody from a total control situation in prison into, well, that's the question, into what?
That's a good question.
Let me ask you this one, Davis. I've now to ask you a question first. Do you have a concern about the use of private prisons in terms of perverse incentives here?
Well, I've been looking for a breath pause to raise that question. Yeah. Arizona is kind of a leader in using private prisons. We have six of them in the state that have our inmates in them. We have others, I think it's four, maybe five now, that have inmates from places like Hawaii's. And we're having quite a bit of private prison activity in Arizona. The problem when you do that is these places kind of cream. They insist on taking people that are not the most violent. They insist on not providing any costly programs to give these people, very few programs. And more than that, the private prison group is moving into the field of probation.
We got maybe 15, 20 seconds. I want to let you get last in on the subject of private prisons. Your concern, if any?
Well, I agree with Dave that they do get a particular slice of the prison population, and we should incentivize them based on recidivism reduction goals if they want to continue to have a contract. For the counties, I've never talked to a private prison operator who's asked me to send more people to prison since our system is so disjointed in that regard. Once they're committed to prison, where they go, I don't know.
We're out of time. Thank you, County Attorney Bill Montgomery and Attorney David Tierney. We'll be back next week in the Think Tank. Song.